Ladies and gentlemen, it is my pleasure to introduce Garner Ted Armstrong of Ambassador College with The World Tomorrow. In this series of programs, we will tell you something of the problems of the world today, how they will affect you, and their solution in The World Tomorrow. Ladies and gentlemen, Garner Ted Armstrong.
Joan, what do you think about present-day food prices?
Well, it's horrible. I hate to go to the market anymore. Every time I go, the things have gone up.
Who do you think is responsible for rising food prices?
I don't know. The people that bringing it to the store. Taxpayers. Our president.
I'd say Trudeau.
Is it just annoying higher prices? Is it the president, Trudeau, the taxpayers, your neighbors, you, me? Or could our artificially inflated economic balloon simply burst someday and we could enter what the economists even now warn us of in books that are coming out more and more and are in evidence everywhere these days of an impending depression when the bottom drops out of the greatest economy the world has ever seen? Nations today live interdependently. That is, no one nation, if it is a big and a very powerful nation, can survive only by itself. The less important the country, the more agrarian it is oriented, the more given toward cottage-type industries, the more self-sufficient, the more heavily industrialized, the more it is a technocracy, the more it is enjoying a fantastic, inflated standard of living, as are the countries of Western Europe, Japan, and certainly the United States of America, the more the growing interdependency among those trading countries. The United States of America today is absolutely interdependent with many other countries on this globe of ours, this earth of ours that we were impressed with pictures from space that made us realize that we're part of a community of peoples on one little gem of light out here in the blackness of space. In the last couple of programs on a growing, viable, powerful, reindustrialized, united Europe, headed now toward full political union, I went into at some depth the growing economic power that Europe represents, that political dwarf but economic giant that is even now emerging to challenge and to compete with the United States in many significant areas around the world, and showing why and how it came to be. But the American dollar has been weakened to the point it has been devalued, and European and Japanese currencies revalued upwards. How does that affect the price of beef, the price of oils and of prepared food, cereals, the price of gasoline, and the price, for that matter, of practically everything in the United States? Very simply, eventually it is going to be felt in practically everything you buy in every last nook and cranny of the American economy. The growing strength of Europe in its economic policies in the face of a weakening United States means these things principally and immediately. Less travel abroad, for one thing. Far higher prices, as we already know, on all imported items. That's the Toyotas, the Datsuns, the Volkswagens, the transistor radios, some of the other, and what isn't there that you can point to that isn't imported, whether it's your boy's leather baseball glove or whether it's, in some cases, even food, such as wines and cheeses and things that come from the common market. It means loss of prestige, loss of faith in Asia and around the world, problems for American businesses abroad, for which some of you may work, but eventually it means higher prices for you, the consumer. The price of everything has gone up, everything. Wholesale prices have been going up by 24%. The United States saw an inflation of over 9% just last spring. Such rises bring to mind the horrible inflation that hit Germany back in 1923, where literally billions of marks were needed to buy a loaf of bread. 62% of all Americans, according to a Gallup poll conducted in May, named the high cost of living as the nation's number one problem. Some other polls have placed the figure at 80%. The minimum weekly paycheck that most American families estimate they need in order just to get along has gone from $101 to $149 in the last 5 years, according to another Gallup poll. Higher prices in everything, from the bottled and packaged goods, the prepared cereals, to meat and dairy products, to imported choice items found in gourmet stocks and on the shelves, are being reflected in every single thing you go to buy these days, and that includes even some of the so-called cut-rate stores, those that are known for dealing in near-wholesale prices. Higher prices have been one of the reasons Americans went into an extra $16 billion debt in 1972. Foremost on everybody's mind is the rising cost of food, and with it especially the cost of meat, and of course the fuel shortage and the cost of fuel. This year's estimates say that food prices are going to climb by about 10%. Women complain about higher prices, all right, and we want to now listen to what some of them say about the costs on almost everything they buy.
As a housewife, how do you feel about rising food prices?
They're atrocious. I can't cope with it. It's too wild. We grow a lot of our own vegetables in the garden, and we just think things are too high. I never buy meat anymore. I buy fish and chicken, mainly, and grow our own vegetables.
Oh, I don't know how my budget is standing it. I can't afford meat at the prices they are. The fish isn't any better. Bread, and who doesn't eat a lot of bread and pasta now to fill in? And they're not good for you, that much of them. And gasoline, you can hardly afford to go to work. It's just awful. It is. Even if you get a raise in salary, it doesn't near compensate for what's been taken out and everything else. Oh, I don't know. Angry. And frustrated and really helpless. I don't know. You know, a mother and a wife that has to run a home feels that she would try to control the situation some way, so that she could have more purchasing power, and there's nothing that we can do. I find the prices rise every time I go to the store. I just can't keep up with the budget any longer.
Have you had to change your eating habits since food prices have been going up so much?
Yes, I have. I have to have tea and the lettuce real often. And the lettuce has gone up high times.
How do you feel about these rising prices?
Well, it really don't fit my pocketbook, but I hope the benefit of the families can, the prices will come down.
Everybody feels everybody else is to blame. Who do we blame, really? Where do you go looking for the person that is out there driving those prices up? With our ever-expanding, burgeoning economy with its voracious screams for more. Higher prices, higher wages. Higher wages, higher prices. Kind of a vicious cycle, isn't it? 1972 saw the biggest jump in food prices in 20 years, and 1973 promises to be even larger. From 1970 to 1972, personal income increased 13%, yet wheat prices soared by 24% out of all proportion, and beef prices went up by a quarter, 25%. Early this spring, many markets saw shortages in some of the vegetables like peas, corn, carrots, and especially cherries and strawberries. Last April, when the president froze meat prices, in some places, veal cutlets were selling at $6.50 a pound, and hot dogs were over $1 a pound, if you can imagine that. 5 years ago, it only took about $18 to feed a retired couple for a week. Now it takes almost $23. 5 years ago, it took $36 to feed a family of four with two children of school age. Now it takes $46. And these are very conservative figures, by the way, based on what the Agriculture Department considers a moderate diet. Since 1970, there's been quite a change. It's amazing when you look back to the year of 1967, such a short time ago, 1970, 1 and 2 years, and prices have gone right off the top. It's no wonder the housewives, by the millions, are expressing dismay. And by the way, talk about commercials, say this is an unrehearsed commercial. We could hardly stop these housewives from talking. In interviews of this type, once you ask an irate housewife about the price of meat, you better be prepared to bring your lunch if you can afford it. Because you're going to have to sit right there and listen, and it's going to be hard to stop her from talking. They were willing to really unload about the irritation, the annoyance, and the impossibility of the situation they faced. And we remember the housewives' boycott in attempts to drive prices down, which seemed to do nothing of the kind. Since 1970, though, the price of lamb has gone up by 20%. And the price of beef by 30%. And meat thievery is on the rise. You could almost call it gold on the hoof these days. And the old Western story of cattle rustling is not over. Except these days, they do it in big vans, and maybe even one at a time here and there, but collectively. In Iowa alone, for example, ranchers lost over $3 million to cattle rustlers in 1972. And 1973 has so far been running at twice the 1972 rate. In 1 year, The price of wheat has almost doubled. Rice has gone up by 50%. Potatoes have jumped over 125%. Broiler chickens almost doubled. Turkeys cost nearly 50% more. Eggs cost over 60% more. And so it goes. This spring, the price of onions went up from $2.50 for a 50-pound sack to $22. Some of these and other statistics are absolutely incredible. But why are food prices so high? For a number of reasons. The United States, for example, exports large quantities of food, and that is one of the main reasons right there. We're in a situation where we must export agricultural products in order to compete with the European Economic Community, and yet they don't want to absorb that many agricultural products, a great difficulty I pointed out in the last couple of programs on the EEC. The financial crunch that farmers face, bad weather, spoiled crops, aging American delivery and railway systems, inefficiencies in the way we distribute food, all of these are a part of it. Another important factor, although this one is not so new, is the fact that most Americans demand packaged, processed food. So it isn't the farmer who is driving up the cost of food. In large part, it's the consumer himself. And although most consumers don't realize it, they've had a direct influence on the changing structure of the food industry. Middlemen, after all, only exist because the consumer demands that there be a middleman to do all the consumer's work. Washing, cutting, weighing, packaging, wrapping, or processing the farmer's product. All of these functions demand machinery and manpower, which of course costs money. If we want to live in big cities and yet eat off the stuff that comes from farms, somebody's going to have to get it to those supermarket shelves so we can complain about how much it costs. From the butcher to the bag boy, everybody is demanding that he gets paid. And well, he should. So consider the price of meat. It's important because that's the biggest chunk of your food budget. How many people handle that beefsteak before you get it home? The steer starts its life on a farm. From there, it's trucked to a feedlot and fattened. Then it's taken to a slaughterhouse. It's hung up, sides of beef, government inspected. The slaughterhouse has to employ men to herd, slaughter, dress out, and transport the steer. Meat graders, sanitary inspectors, government inspectors all do their part. Then the carcass is going to be trucked again, this time to a breaking plant. And here the butchers are going to process the manageable sections into the retail butcher's form. A smaller chunk that he gets. Again, meat graders, sanitary inspectors, and general laborers all have their part, from truck drivers to meat handlers. Finally, the sections of carcass are trucked to the retail store. And another butcher prepares consumer cuts for weighing and wrapping. And that's still not the end of the line. After you choose the steak from the display case where it finally reposes, neatly formaldehyded, the chances are, to preserve its redness and to prevent it from spoilage, and you know you don't want to buy that steak that looks dark, not realizing it may be more tender because it's aged a little bit. After you choose the steak from the display case, it's still going to be handled probably by the cashier and the bag boy. But how many people handle that steak on its way to you before the cash register jingled away and you reached in your purse or your pocket, and with that look of sheer agony on your face, paid for it? Too many. Far too many for us to even tell you about them. We've only mentioned about 20, but there were a lot more than that involved in getting that steak to you.
The mighty Roman Empire had everything. Plenty of leisure time. Their own new morality. Enormous military might, the religion of their own choice, political freedom. Yet Rome fell. What went wrong? You can know by reading The Modern Romans, a 93-page lesson of history ignored. This free booklet examines the five major factors behind the fall of ancient Rome and how these same conditions affect our country today. The Modern Romans will be sent to you free of charge in the public interest. Send for it now. The Modern Romans asks, can we afford the grandeur of Rome? Send your request to Ambassador College, Box 345, GPO Sydney, New South Wales. That's Ambassador College, Box 345, GPO Sydney, New South Wales.
Just what is the trouble with higher prices? Is it because there just isn't enough food to go around? A shortage? Well, sometimes, sure. Crop damage, citrus crops, wheat, corn, whatnot. You hear about damages because of terrible weather. We heard about the hundreds of thousands of cattle that died in last winter's freezes and ice storms across Iowa, Illinois, Texas, Oklahoma, and so on. But there's a bigger story to it, too. That's why in the last couple of programs when I was talking about the growing might of the European Economic Community and about preferential trade agreements with about a quarter of all of humankind, the growing might that they represent, and the competition they're giving the United States, I brought in several times the story of U.S. agricultural products, because that's one of our mainline exports to the EEC countries. Why do we export that much? Because we want to bring this imbalance in the balance of payments deficit back into line. We want to bring our imports and exports into balance. And one of the main things we're trying to push is agricultural products. So it isn't really the old supply and demand story after all. There may be even more supply than we need. The story is one of governmental quotas and restrictions. Farmers who are told what not to plant, how many acres of what to plant, and even if they do sometimes and there is no market for it, they're governmentally subsidized, their crops purchased by the government, deliberately held back for a certain period of time, and then sold to a foreign country or maybe, like as not, even given away. But here's a part of the story. America exports 20% of her corn and a full 60% of her wheat crop. And yet wheat has gone out the top in recent months and years, as you know. Even with high meat prices at home, last year we still exported 62 million pounds of beef. Total American farm exports in 1972 were $9.4 billion. $1 billion in food was given away under the Food for Peace program. Russia and China purchased $1.3 billion worth of grain for immediate shipment in 1972. Many agricultural experts agree that the Russian wheat deal was the main factor that precipitated the last big rise in American meat prices. Here's what at least one member of the meat handling industry had to say about it.
Some people say that America's overextended abroad, that we're sending too many goods, even agricultural goods, overseas, and we should be perhaps helping our own people here at home more. Do you share that view?
Yes, I do, because, well, for example, the wheat deal last year that was supposed to bring in millions of dollars into the country, I don't think it's, you know, I don't know if it's brought in that much money, but what it's done is it's made, well, we don't have enough food to give, you know, enough feed to give to the cattle, number one. We don't have enough to make bread. We don't, you know, so we have to, you know, raise the prices. The price of bread has risen because we don't have any wheat here. The price of beef has risen because we don't have anything to feed them.
The big Russian wheat deal caused a 28% rise in what the farmer pays to feed his cattle. Another complication of the Russian wheat deal was that the extra railroad boxcar had to be used to haul wheat to Russian ships. Consequently, there was a shortage of boxcars in the States to haul grain to American markets. How do you like that one? The United States finds itself in an incredible dilemma. That is, having to sell its food abroad. At the same time, in order to support the sagging dollar, and yet, a tremendous rise in food costs that may require a ban of food exports to solve. We dare not do this because we're trying desperately to compete in foreign markets abroad, and yet if we don't, it looks like none of us can afford to eat anymore. Weather has also got to be taken into account. In the past, favorable price conditions have enabled Americans to double their yearly consumption of beef per person. The diet in our country has changed markedly in the last few years. Up to 114 pounds today, as opposed to 56 pounds of beef two decades ago. Recently, onslaughts of bad weather in all parts of the country, more especially, of course, where most of the foods are grown, has cut the abundance and favorable prices that American consumers would like to expect. A spokesman for the American National Cattlemen's Association says, and I quote, "We've probably had the worst winter with the greatest impact in history. Snow caused the death of over 200,000 head of cattle in Colorado, New Mexico, Nebraska, and Iowa. Because of rain, snow, and floods in the Midwest, corn production will be off by 30%, and late plantings because of a wet spring will mean crops are more susceptible to insect damage." So flooding prevented planting of a quarter of the Missouri wheat crop just this past spring. The Wall Street Journal has reported that a succession of snowstorms, torrential rains, and floods wiped out close to $1 billion worth of livestock and crops last spring and hampered farmers planting this fall's crops. The same newspaper reported that farmers' crop losses in 1972 were the worst ever in our history. And a lot of other problems, of course, are confronting the farmers these days, not the least of which is the financial crunch. For example, in the Corn Belt, some fertilizer, and that's probably chemical mostly, because the organic type is simply too expensive to package, and some of it isn't all that organic because the chemicals in cows' diets. But it sold for $7 a ton a year and a half ago, and now sells for over You ready for this? $87 a ton. How would you like to be in an industry like the farmers are, where a substance upon which they depend for their very livelihood goes from $7 to $87 for the same amount in just a year and a half? Now, late plantings because of a wet spring means that more crops are susceptible to damage at harvest time. Dependence on various chemicals to fatten cattle has caused a rise of from 4 to 10 cents a pound. The fuel shortage means higher food costs to farmers as they struggle to find necessary fuel for their tractors. Many farmers complain loudly they were unable to get enough fuel to even put in the crops. And farmers, too, are faced with a tight financial situation. Since 1967, their production costs, such as tractor fuel, have gone up 38%. The feed costs have risen 44%. Farmers are paying 61% more in taxes and 93% more for livestock since that time. The American system of transporting food is also sick, and that reflects itself to you in higher prices. Many of the railroads are in a very bad financial state. In fact, 6 out of the 14 northeastern railroads are bankrupt, and because of this, they have difficulty keeping tracks in good repair and the like. For example, one derailment in New York City as a result of that lack of maintenance resulted in ruining an entire shipment of cattle feed. There are inefficiencies in the way we get food to market then, both on rubber tires and on rails, as well as in the picking and the marketing process. For example, the price of lettuce will double from the time it is ripe in the field to the time it is picked and packed. And then its price will multiply 4 times over before it reaches the shelf of your local market. Lettuce has been a real problem recently, and I think all of you in the States, and certainly probably even in Canada as well, know of some of the lettuce pickers' attempts to unionize and driving prices up for farm workers, itinerant most of them, who are, admittedly, grossly underpaid. And so the story goes. From picker to processor to consumer, everybody feels they're getting a raw deal. Even if we do get an occasional small drop in food prices at harvest time, the fact is that the era of cheap food is over. The basic factors of a hungry world, volatile weather, more paper money in more pockets, more and more people, all ensure that food prices are going to remain right up there at the top as long as the present artificial economic balloon stays inflated. Furthermore, with government controls on the price of food, many farmers and agricultural associations are warning of nationwide food shortages if the price controls work. And on top of all of this, the United States finds itself with a 20-year low in wheat stocks and practically no reserves in corn or soybeans. And these, of course, are some of the principal products we are sending abroad. There was a time a few short years ago when Americans had a tremendous wheat surplus. That is over now because, you see, we've either given it away or we sent it to Russia or maybe to other countries as they were willing to either pay or had need. Now, the energy crisis also interrelates to the food crisis and fuel crisis in that the energy crisis promises to wreak economic havoc. The price of everything is affected because of the rising cost of fuels and electricity. Not only because everything has to be transported to your local store, but because we rely so much on our plastic packaging, on natural gas and synthetic materials in our everyday living. The cost of the driving is the first thing that's going up, and gas companies have been even suggesting lately private automobiles that look more like giant tankers where they carry a full year's supply right there in the back of the vehicle itself. Gasoline prices, that is when you can get it, are going from 50 to 75 cents and more a gallon in some areas. In one Midwest city, gasoline prices are already a full third more than they were only 1 year ago. Many stations are rationing their customers to 10 gallons when they stop in. Yet Americans are traveling just as much or more and buying fuel just as much as if there were no shortage. The fuel companies are irritated over recent publicity, which gave a sort of a lie to the earlier claim of fuel shortages, and many Americans heaved a sigh of relief and said it's just another Watergate and reversed their lying to us. There isn't any shortage. The big companies say, oh yes, there is. It's a matter of supply and demand. That we're actually producing more than ever before, but we're driving more. And as I said in the program in the last season, I understand it. I'm sure I do. It's just that I am not quite sure that you could explain it to me or I could to you, but I have this kind of confidence in my government that when they put that anti-smog device on our automobile and it reduces our mileage by up to 50%, and so we Americans in our anti-smog, our smog-immune communities like Los Angeles, where you can see about 4 blocks on a clear day, if you're lucky, in the months of June and July, which is a stifling, enormous, hideous problem I intend getting into in some depth in future programs. Here we are, burning twice the amount of gas to go the same distances, yet Americans are traveling further and more these days than ever before. It all interrelates. So there is a far greater demand, and that's where the crunch really comes. Airlines are even charging more because of higher fuel prices. The price of cooking and heating is rising, and the price of electricity is rising, and people are using more of these energy slaves all the time. In the last year, scrap steel has gone from $35 to $50 a ton. Cotton went up from 39 cents to 48 cents a pound. Lumber prices went up by 30%, or just this last spring, so building prices are out the top, too. The cost of new homes went soaring up over $1,200, and you know, with recent revaluation in European economies, what Volkswagens cost now compared to what they used to. So, while we find ourselves in an economic crunch of proportions never before realized, we look back in history and we see that economists who tell us that there are bizarre factors here which seem to imply a kind of a graphic repetition of history, that some of the very same signs are right now evident, like handwriting on the wall in the American economy today, that we're here in 1927, 28, and early 29. Are we headed for another full crash in our economy? One thing is sure. We have lost our ability to compete abroad. We have virtually priced ourselves at our standard of living out of foreign markets. The very main product, agricultural in nature, which we are now trying to force upon Europeans, trying to get them to absorb more than they really want to buy in order to bring our international economic imbalance back into some kind of harmony, is the substance of which we Americans must eat and live upon, and the prices of our domestic suppliers are going right out the top. Millions of us are irritated, angry, frustrated, completely thwarted, and don't seem to know who is really to blame. Well, we all are. We all are. Perhaps someday we're going to come to see that the United States of America is greater when she is in great national jeopardy and difficulty. Maybe once again, the American Yankee ingenuity is going to emerge from the present chaos in which we all live, and we're going to have an opportunity to see Americans who, again, know what it means to sacrifice, whether we like it or not. Write for this booklet, The Modern Romans. Do you know this booklet will tell you exactly what it was like in the average Roman village and home of that day? It tells you about their affluence, about the building of pipes or ducts in the wall, how they had what we might call modern conveniences, indoor plumbing. The Modern Romans, The Decline of Western Civilization. It showed how agriculture was in trouble, the economy was in trouble, joblessness became rampant, and the military even threatened insurgents or the overthrow of government. This booklet, The Modern Romans, will put you in the picture in modern-day United States of America, Canada, Britain, Australia, South Africa, and other countries, and show you how our Western English-speaking world is going the way of ancient Rome. It's free of charge, it's graphically illustrated, it has full-color pictures throughout, and it costs you nothing. All you need to do is to request it by sending your letter to Post Office Box 345, Sydney, New South Wales. Be sure to tell us the call letters of your station. We need that. That's all. There is no cost, but tell us the name of the radio station to which you've been listening, the call letters, and then send your letter to Box 345, Sydney, New South Wales. Until next time, this is Garner Ted Armstrong saying goodbye, friends.
You have been listening to The World Tomorrow. If you would like more information, write to Ambassador College, Box 345, GPO Sydney, New South Wales. That's Ambassador College, Box 345, GPO Sydney, New South Wales.